This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 534, brought to you by Hacker Listeners just like you.
You just can't stand the way that I walked out from the wreckage. Can't understand the way that I turned myself around.
Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 534. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hi, Connor.
Full stop. No Josh Flanagan.
None. We have exorcised the demon.
We've had our fill.
Yeah. Listen, sometimes you go to work and the guy who sits next to you doesn't sit next to you anymore. And that might have happened. Josh might have been laid. Josh might have been laid off this morning. It was a rough morning for HR. But listen, we had to make some cuts and Josh just wasn't cutting it.
Or he's on a plane right now.
Or he's flying home from San Francisco.
One of those two. So we are iFanboy. We like comics. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks their favorite book. We call that the pick of the week. We'll talk about that book, other books, talk about some other fun stuff. Listener mail. It's fun for everyone. Here's your spoiler warning. This is a review show. There'll probably be some spoilers. So if you're that kind of person who's worried about it, exercise of caution. Ron, you had to pick on a very light week, at least for me.
It was a formidable week. I wouldn't go as far to say it was light. I actually found myself reading a bunch of books that I was actually really excited about, and it was one of those weeks where there wasn't like a insane like no brainer slam dunk release, but there were a bunch of books that I could have easily made pick of the week.
Interesting. I only had 9 books in my stack.
Oh, interesting. How many did I had? I had. You're always up on the numbers. I don't count. I'm not as number centric as you are. I had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. I had 13 books.
Interesting.
So,
okay.
Yeah, it's a fair mix.
That's a fair week.
Yeah, but ultimately, the comedy stylings of one Mr. Chip Zdarsky teaming up with Mr. Kevin Maguire on Howard the Duck #7 won me over and gave me pushed to the top of the pack as. Pretty much, you get a big bowl. You go to Marvel's office in Manhattan here in New York City, and you get a big bowl and you put in a little Chip Zdarsky, a little Kevin Maguire, a little a whole lot of Howard the Duck, a little bit of She-Hulk, a little bit of Daredevil, a little bit of Spider-Man, a little bit of Cap'n Steve, and you get a riotous good time.
Well, I saw you made this the pick, and I thought, oh, another Howard the Duck issue, and then I thought, oh God, Josh isn't going to be on. It means I have to talk about it. But then I saw that it was Maguire, so I got it and read it, and it was very good.
It was great, wasn't it?
If this was the book, and what I mean is if it was Kevin Maguire drawing it and it was Howard the Duck and a bunch of random superheroes every week, I'd probably read it.
And it and for the most part, it has. It's been a little bit of it. It's definitely Howard in the Marvel Universe, very active, and there have been cameos. There were Doctor Strangers in previous issues and things like that. And nothing against the art stylings of the regular artist Joe Quiñones.
He's great.
He's great. He's fantastic. But there's something about Kevin Maguire and humor-based material. Mm-hmm. And the thing was, this wasn't even the yucks of Justice League International that we, the classic.
Different kind of humor, yeah.
It's a totally different kind of humor. But to see Kevin Maguire drawing these characters, he's done some stuff at Marvel, but I always think of him more in a DC context.
Right.
So it was a lot of fun to see that. But then also to see, listen, say what you will, whether you like Chip Zdarsky or not, he knows how to have fun with these characters.
Right.
And there's actually a lot of really good jokes in this book.
There is, this is the kind of book, since it stars a talking duck, that you can use to skewer the industry or the superhero. I mean, I don't want that all the time, but it's every once in a while I like to have the industry skewered. And this is the kind of book where you can really take the piss out of a lot of these characters.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm on a little bit of a Spider-Man high after seeing Civil War, but I thought all the Spider-Man stuff in here was gold.
Yep.
The part where he's in the tree and Howard the Duck tells him to get some empathy, and he says, "But Uncle Ben and Gwen, hi," and it just looks away. It's just, I read this right after coming back from the movie, and I really enjoyed all of it.
Yeah.
Daredevil, barely holding onto a sacred identity, and then the old man Steve, even though he's not old man anymore in the books, it doesn't matter in a book like this because it's not really.
Well, I think they also qualified at the beginning of when this takes place, and it took place before anything,
Or it just takes place in the Howard the Duck bubble.
Yeah, exactly.
These characters don't exactly match up to their other counterparts. But I just think this was tons of fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was funny because I flipped over to the opening to the title page to see the recap, and I see the recap ends with before any of that even more cool stuff happened. Like, what, you ask? Do I have to spoon feed you everything? Just turn the page and read for yourself. Jeez, it's just there's this the Howard the Duck obnoxiousness that Zdarsky is dialed into and is very, very funny, and using Howard as that cipher, as that intro, as that entry point into being able to poke fun at, whether it's Peter Parker and Spider-Man or it's, or Captain America, so part of it is that they're working on a case. She-Hulk is defending someone and Daredevil's trying to prosecute him. That's why they're involved. So there's a legal kind of thing. And turns out they've got to go to the Savage Land. And so they get a Quinjet and they get Captain Steve to take them to the Savage Land. And Captain Steve is lecturing them about how the Savage Land is a protective area by the UN, etc. And Howard's going, geez, when did Captain America become Captain the United Nations?
Right.
And then he goes, "I'm just Steve now." Like, he is a license to say whatever he wants, and it's stuff that we think about and we often joke about, but Howard the Duck will say it and will, in the context of that, it's funny to put them in a position where the characters have to react to that, like you said, like with the Uncle Ben and Gwen moment and that sort of thing.
And Spider-Man's there, and they end up having to fight a bunch of dinosaurs because they're in the Savage Land, and there's sort of a take on Jurassic Park there. It's just, a lot of things get made fun of, but it's also a fun, kind of adventure story. And Kevin Maguire is one of the best artists in comics, and he does great dinosaurs.
Yeah. What was interesting is that recently we've been pretty critical of Kevin Maguire's work, mainly because he's had some challenges with colorists. But interesting that they chose to have series regular artist Joe Quiñones, along with some assists, do the coloring to keep it. And which I thought was a smart move because it's keeping it in the color palette of the series so far. So it's maintaining that artistic consistency.
I was about three pages in when I furiously scrolled back to the front to see who the colorist was because, as you said, for many years, Kevin Maguire had his own personal colorist who was less than professional level and was really destroying his artwork. And this looked really good, so I was very happy to see.
Yeah, so it's Joe Quiñones with Jordan Gibson doing the color art.
Yeah.
I did like the bit in the beginning when they were trying to get the information at a gala in Manhattan, and they had Peter Parker working undercover, but everyone Peter set up this whole thing where he's the head of Parker Industries and Spider-Man is his bodyguard. And so they're talking to Peter, and then Howard calls Spider-Man, and Peter's got to switch over to the phone and be like, "Oh, hey, just fighting Doc Ock,"
It was funny. I think anyone, you know, I haven't read any issues of this before, so you can totally pick this up when, yeah. You know, and have an enjoyable one-shot story.
Also, I gotta give Zdarsky credit for not going to the well too much. In the very first page at that gala where Peter Parker's undercover, there are two editor like asterisk notes.
Right.
But then he doesn't go back to that well again. But they were very funny. I mean, so when it's Peter Parker saying that he's the head of Parker Industries, and the editor note says, it's true, you can't make this stuff up. I mean, it was made up by Dan Slott, but you know what I mean.
Well, there's one more note when they're flying the Quinjet about
right.
Something. Well, actually, there's a couple more because there's a Brubaker one on the Savage Land.
Oh, and there's also the petition to make Lockjaw Daredevil Seeing Eye Dog.
Actually, there's a lot of them. The spiders.
There actually are. Yeah, but it didn't feel like he was overdoing it. They felt right, you know.
It was a nice balance. Everything about this issue worked. If it had been, this might have been my pick because I didn't really have any.
when everyone was getting mad at Spider-Man for not knowing how his spider sense works,
yes.
Spider-Man says, have none of you read my blog? And the editor's note says, spider sense and sensibility and also responsibility, not weblog, not biz. That's good. Zdarsky's funny. I he cracks me up. And yeah, and like you said, it's a one shot. If you're not reading Howard the Duck, you don't need to have read the series before. If you just want to kind of partake in the art, you know, in the artistic fun. Mm-hmm. And it's just an adventure, and it all wraps up at the end in a nice little moment.
Yep.
Yeah. So it was good. It, well deserved pick of the week in my book.
Before I read Howard the Duck 7, I probably would have given it to Black Widow 3. I'm not really responding to the story all that much at the moment, but I am, as we always do with Somni's art, just enjoying living in this visual world.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. This was really a...
close?
It was a close runner-up to the pick of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it was because I felt as if the first two issues were really almost should have been one double-sized issue.
Right.
And it was that kind of fast, you know, that fast kind of action scene. And then the second issue kind of gave us a little more insight as to what was going on. But this issue, with the combination of the flashbacks and the storytelling narrative approach, I thought this issue has been the best of the three issues so far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It has the most interesting stuff to tell about Black Widow's past. Even her past, I never really know with Black Widow what I'm reading. Is it, you know, in the comics, she's still from the World War II era. I don't know if that's been retconned or not. I don't.
Right.
To me, Black Widow's always been the immortal spy from World War
Russia.
II. Yeah. But I don't know if that's the case anymore.
It keeps up the whole idea of whatever the academy that she went
right.
to.
Right, and it doesn't really matter when that academy was. Some in her childhood, she was very brutally trained to be a spy, and she's still dealing with the repercussions of that, and that's totally fine. Doesn't matter when. I just, for myself, I don't know. But here, there's still enough mystery where I'm not exactly sure what's going on.
Right, yeah.
I know people are trying to kill her as she's trying to find information in this old shack where she was trained. And that's okay, but right, I need very soon to have some idea of what the overall story here is. Because we're halfway through a collected edition at this point, and I don't know what's happening.
Right. But I will say there was that one splash page where she's fighting the guy, and the fight is happening in the present day, and it's kind of in the background and in the foreground in the red colored of the so they colored all the flashback scenes in this red kind of tone.
Yep.
And in the foreground of that, you have you know, kind of three figures of a young Natasha Romanoff doing ballet, and then clearly an older one doing ballet, and then in present day in her Black Widow costume as she polishes off the guy in the fight, you know, kind of balancing between the ballet and the fighting style, kind of the Russian training.
Yeah, that was a really great page. Yeah.
That page alone was just like, oh wow, that's just like that's just art. You know, like from like what Somni's doing on our artistic level is like leveling up, and that page could stand on its own and it tells a story there. Like if you just look at that one page, you could tell the whole story of this issue from that one page.
I feel like Somni is the new Romita.
Interesting.
Senior, in that he was sort of the gold standard in storytelling.
Yeah.
I feel like they should have, you know, sometime in the future when he's a little older and needs to slow down a little bit, Somni teach, you know, new comic artists how to tell a story. 'Cause
yeah.
There's a lot of people as good as him, but I don't know if there's anybody better than him.
Right. Yeah. No. And I agree. I mean, and those are pretty big shoes to fill. But yeah. I mean, the elegance of which Somni storytelling goes, and the flow and the pace of the story. It just every time it's amazing. And that's what, with those first two issues that were really more that were fast paced and kind of action scenes. You know, this tells a more kind of complete story. You get a sense of you know, Black. You know, this the issue starts with Black Widow just walking through New York City and random people telling her things, which I thought was kind of weird. Which is like. Were they all spy people, or were they mind controlled? Right. What the deal is? Yeah.
That's what I mean. There's just a lot of questions left. I don't know exactly what's happening. It's not terrible, but by issue 4 next month, I better have a good idea what's happening.
Yeah. But Somni's doing a great job of pulling you into it.
Yeah.
And I will be honest, one of the things that almost gave a pick of the week alone was that she travels to the airport, and then we get a third of the page panel of a map of North America with a line to Russia to show her traveling. And I was like, hey, anytime there's a map, Indiana Jones style map of travel.
Indiana Jones had a lot of effect on Young Ron's
development. It really did. Yeah.
If they could have made a way for the dot to go across, animate across, that would have been perfect.
That would have been fantastic. Yeah, exactly. Or just a shot of Black Widow kind of napping on the plane while right. The map is going.
And or like, just to have Chris Somni and Mark Waid do an Indiana Jones book.
I would sign me up for that. Wow. You got to wonder, with the assumption that they actually make this next Indiana Jones movie.
Right.
I mean, Marvel could make Indiana Jones comics. That could be something we see.
I would love that.
Yeah.
If this team did it.
Well, it goes back to the – hypothetically, if they had done a fourth Indiana Jones movie, which we all know they didn't, hypothetically, in that movie, they might have mentioned Indiana Jones' time during World War II.
Right, as some sort of spy.
Those would have been fantastic comic books.
Yes. So Empress number 2, Mark Miller, Stuart Immonen's icon book. I've got not a real problem with it. I mean, it's gorgeous. We all know Immonen's one of the best artists. We talk about him all the time. But I was halfway through this issue, and I was trying to figure out why I'm not connecting to this book like I have Miller's other books, which have all been, you know, most of his recent work's been 6-issue minis, you know, short one collection stories. But I feel like with those books, he's done a really good job of establishing the characters very quickly. And here, I don't know really anything about these people or why I should care about them other than they're being hunted. And I can certainly go along with that ride because it's drawn really well. But at the end of the day, I don't really care about these people because I don't know anything about them.
I do not disagree with you. This second issue, after I finished the second issue, I was like, oh, man, this is kind of ending the run of perfection coming from Miller. Not ending the run, but it's just more – it's more like I get what he's doing. He's trying to do very big epic space opera, you know, kind of style. And I like what Immonen's doing, and I like the world that we're in and all this sort of stuff. But there's too many people, and I don't know who's who aside from young George Lucas.
Right.
I don't know who the Queen's protector with a beard who looks like young George Lucas. I don't know who anybody is. I get the stakes. I get the idea that – you know, the queen and her children are running away from the evil, you know, dictator. I get that, but I can't keep track of. I mean, like it's a mother and a bunch of kids, and I don't know. You know, yeah, it's like we don't have a relationship with these people,
right?
And therefore, the danger that they get into, I don't feel the stakes, and so yeah, it's. I'm hoping in the long run it all kind of pays off, and I'm going to stick with it because I love Immonen. Mm-hmm. But this isn't the immediately grab you and fall in love the way Huck and Starlight did for us, you know.
Right.
Previously.
He did such a good job with those other books of immediately you loved Huck, immediately you loved the main character in Starlight, immediately I loved the guys in MPH. Like he did a really good job of that, and I don't know. It could just be a different style of storytelling here he's trying, and it's fine. It's fast-paced and high concept and high octane. And I get it, and they're running for their lives, so I understand that at least. But at the end of the day, I don't even know their names, so
– yeah, exactly.
How much am I supposed to care about them? It's tough because I really want to love it.
And that's the thing is that – and it's a question of how much – I mean this is the classic kind of challenge in comics, but – you know, how, you know, if someone is as talented and amazing as Immonen is just buying it to absorb the art and marvel at that enough?
Right.
Or do you need that emotional resonance and that connection to the characters? I mean, of course, I mean, they go story and art go hand in hand, but it's the kind of thing I'm not going to stop reading it because I love Immonen and I want to see where it goes. But, you know, I read my comics in order of excitement, and the next issue is going to be in the bottom third of the stack, not the top, top third.
Yeah, I don't get excited for it like I get excited for his other works, right, you know, lately. But
yeah,
that could change. I'm hoping it does, but for right now, it's just disappointing.
Yeah. Which is such a bummer, because I know how much reverence Miller has for Star Wars and these type of stories. You know, and Starlight was so good.
Yeah.
Starlight was so good, but Starlight was a different kind of story. I mean, Starlight was. I mean, whether you want to go the Incredibles comparison or I'd rather go the Flash Gordon.
Starlight was Flash Gordon pulpy, and that was yeah. So unfollow 138. Oh no, wait.
No, sorry.
No, it's just that the cover
is very confusing
with these giant, you know, the giant 138 to denote how many people are alive from the original 140. Draws your eye right to it. So if you didn't know any different, you'd think this was unfollow 138.
That's a very good point. That's a poor design decision. This issue, Rob Williams still writing, and this is, you know, the compelling. We've been talking about this Vertigo series. It's probably the breakout Vertigo series that all three of us are on board with. You know, telling the a crazy billionaire who identifies 140 people to receive his inheritance via social network. And then as people die, the share that the survivors get increases. And so that 138 represents of the 140, there are 138 still alive. And Rob Williams is doing a great job writing it. But this issue featured on art Marguerite Savage, who also did Scarlet Witch number 6. And I wanted to highlight both these issues because if you're not familiar with Marguerite Savage, both of these issues will blow you away. I thought she was great.
She was great, but it's the same problem I had with the last issue, which featured R.M. Guerra, who was also great, is that part of my love for this book was the world that was being drawn in the first 5-6 issues.
Right.
That Dowling was drawing. Hopefully this is just like a one trade worth of single issue stories focusing on characters of different artists, and we get back to Dowling's art. He had a creepiness to his art that really helped the tone of this book, and now that feeling is inherently gone for me.
Yeah. Yeah, and I could see that. And I wonder now, after having two issues with two guest artists and both issues being kind of single character focus, I wonder if that's the approach they're taking, and then the next arc will go back to the greater group or whatever. Like, I'm curious what the plan is on this. But this issue dove into Courtney, who is one of the more compelling and interesting characters from the first arc, who is the, you know, kind of emotionally detached sex pot, you know, kind of a rich girl kind of thing. And we find out her backstory and why she's like that. And I'll slow clap for playing the fucked up Vertigo card.
Yeah. It was all fucked up. And then her rebellion by going out and getting a reality show about her now that she's famous for having the money.
Yeah.
And then that blowing up in her face too. It was a great issue. I just feel myself missing. Cause when those six issues were coming out, I think it was pick of the week 3 times.
Yeah.
It was something really special about that pairing. And it's still a really good book. It's just not upper echelon for me right now.
Yeah.
Now that Dowling's not drawing it.
I mean, because the thing is that, like, and it's almost like I wonder if these singular origin stories or character focused kind of things are happening too soon.
Yes.
You know, like, because this is a great device. I mean, like, especially from a publishing plan, you know, like, it's a great way to give the regular artist a little time to catch up and all this sort of stuff. And so, like, maybe doing one of these, like, do a story arc of 5 issues and then have one issue being one of these kind of origin stories and then do 5 more with the main story, or do this kind of, you know, origin story but in the 3rd or 4th trade. You know, like, it just seems too soon.
The main story is slowly progressing through these issues. Like, at the end of this, she moves into Akira's weirdo compound, commune.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's slowing way down because we're spending a lot of time learning about these people. And I realized we just talked about a book that we didn't, where we said we didn't know anybody, but I felt like we knew them well enough in that first 6 issues or 5 issues to not necessarily need so many of these in a row. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see how this plays out.
Yeah. Did you read Scarlet Witch number 6?
No, I haven't.
This was delightful. I mean, the delightful award for this episode is going to go to Scarlet Witch number 6.
All right.
So, you know, James Robinson has been writing this, and it's been a different artist with every issue, and there's no real, you know, thread through these issues. They're all just kind of singular one-shot stories featuring the Scarlet Witch. And in this particular story again, Marguerite Savage is on art. And the art is just it's a tour de force. I mean, like it's going from unfollow, and then the Scarlet Witch just showed that, like, if Marguerite Savage should absolutely be on people's radar as somebody to watch.
Is it the same style?
Yeah, same style, different coloring, a little softer coloring than on unfollow, and I would say a little more flowery layouts on Scarlet Witch.
Mm-hmm.
because I think, you know, just because of the nature of the book and the, you know, have the approach. I actually really, really love the layouts and the use of panels that she uses in Scarlet Witch. They got this great kind of like double lined red border to the panels, mm-hmm. which give you just a hint of Scarlet in terms of the Scarlet Witch, but also makes them stand out and look really kind of unique. Scarlet Witch is not in the gypsy costume here. She's in more of a standard kind of superhero-y kind of costume, with like a bodysuit with a red cape type thing.
Right.
But basically, this all takes place in Paris after the terror attacks. And there's a hero in Paris who I don't think we've ever met before, but it's a dude who's got wings, an angel-like character. And apparently his wife died in the terror attacks. And since his wife dying, he can't fly. Even though he's got the wings, he's kind of like impotent to his power. And so what happens is the Scarlet Witch conjures up a portal to the afterlife, and his wife is there, and he realizes that she's, you know, has moved on to the next plane. And so then he goes, well, I can't live without her, so I'm going to kill myself. And Scarlet Witch stops him, and then his wife yells at him and says, no, you need to live. You need to take this gift that you have, and I'm going to be here waiting for you, but there's still much more you need to do, and you need to protect our city and save our city, and you need to fly. And it ends with a great full-page splash page of him flying, and there's the Eiffel Tower and Scarlet Witch kind of looking. Yeah, I mean, like this issue, and not to be too hyperbolic, but I think this is the best issue of the run so far, because it not only was it really, really heartfelt and really emotional, but I think James Robinson showed a restraint, a kind of a less is more with a lot of the dialogue and with the text, where previous issues have been very, very, very dialogue heavy. Mm-hmm. This flowed really nicely and was really focused. It was really tight, which I can appreciate from a storytelling standpoint. I mean, in one issue, he was able to introduce us to this character, give us his origin, give us the conflict of what happened, have a really emotionally heavy event occur, and then give us redemption in 20 pages. Like that's comic booking. I mean, right. that's why James Robinson is one of the greats right now. You know, like, I mean, he should be having the discipline to do that. And the Marguerite Savage just didn't miss a beat at all.
Cool.
This was a strong contender for pick of the week as well, too. If they just had one joke in here, then it might have just it definitely wasn't.
Howard the Duck appearance.
Yeah, if Howard the Duck had appeared in this, then it would have gotten it. But no. But yeah, I actually give this an edge over Unfollow as the better Marguerite Savage work. I would say go if you get a chance, go back to the store and take a look at it, just because it just is beautiful.
All right. Quick break in the action to tell you how you can help the show. Go to fanboy.com/support. That's where you can find an Amazon link if you're making Amazon purchases. If you want to help us out, you can do it that way. We get a little piece of the sale. You don't lose any money, only Amazon does, and we keep the lights on. Also help us out directly by going to fanboy.com/support and becoming an Fanboy member. For $3 a month or $30 a year, you can help us out directly by supporting the show. Also on that page, just a donation button if you want to help out. Give any amount you want. If you were, you know, giving out grants like Tony Stark, just randomly.
To Knox? Did Knox get a grant?
Knox, I believe Knox got a Stark grant as well. So you can go to fanboy.com/support. That's how you can help us out. We appreciate everybody who does that. Thank you very much.
All right. So moving along. So Image put out a book called Alpha King #1. Mm-hmm. Did you look at this at all?
No,
or?
I did not.
Okay. So there's a brewery in Indiana called Three Floyds Brewery.
Okay.
And and it's funny because Three Floyds actually has for those in – we're going to pull back the curtain on the comic industry. Three Floyds Brewery does a they've got very kind of more like – I would say like metal-themed beers.
Okay, heavy metal.
Yeah, heavy metal. Like, yeah, metal or heavy metal or whatever. And there's a very loose comics connection between them. I know Tim Seeley's done label art for them in the past, as well as some other comic artists have done label arts for them. And they also have like a festival that happens called Dark Lord Day, where they release this one type of beer, the Dark Lord beer, that comes out only at this festival. And literally for years, it was the same weekend as C2E2.
Oh.
And so what you had was a select number of beer enthusiast comic creators often would disappear on Saturday of C2E2 because they drove down to Indiana to go for Dark Lord Day. And they have, and at Dark Lord Day, they have bands play, and it's very metal, and it's in a lot of beer and all this sort of stuff. Yeah, like I'm looking at the so Dark Lord Day this past year had I Hate God and Skeleton Witch and Municipal Waste and Plague Bringer play.
Are those folk bands?
No, they're all metal bands. But so not surprisingly, one of those creators that attends Dark Lord Day and is a beer enthusiast is Brian Azzarello.
Not surprising at all.
Not surprising at all. So what he has done is he's teamed up with Three Floyds, and this book, Alpha King, is written by Brian Azzarello with art by Simon Bisley.
Metal.
Metal. And not only is it metal, but it's ridiculous where there's a home brewer in Indiana who then something happens and becomes the Alpha King and becomes this warrior. And I don't know what's going on, but it was very Warcraft-esque in terms of the creatures. And I mean, it's Simon Bisley drawing a metal book about a beer. Like,
so is it takes place in the modern day, or is it like
it was a little mix? What happens is that it starts off in some sort of fantasy world, right? It's a very Warcraftian world, by the way. Which, by the way, the Warcraft movie is coming out very soon.
Yes,
I don't know if you realize that. I got an email like, get your tickets for Warcraft now. It's like, ooh, I gotta do that. Are we gonna do a show about that or no?
I don't know.
We should. That'd be fun.
Yeah, probably.
Okay. Anyway, so it's a very kind of Warcrafty world, and then it cuts to Indiana where this guy's homebrewing in his garage, and then something happens and the worlds kind of collide. And then the brewer then reemerges as the Alpha King, and that's where the issue ends, and we're going to pick it up from there. So I don't know. If you're into beer, if you're into Three Floyds, if you're into metal, if you're into Brian Azzarello, I would say check it out. It was fun. It was a lot of fun, but it's totally nonsense. Just not nonsensical.
Speaking of that, Superman coming of Superman number 4. Are you reading this book?
No, I'm not, and I forgot about it. And when you sent it over, and I looked up to who was the creator on it, I'm like, I got to go back and read this.
So this is the Neil Adams book. He puts out so periodically good. A DC book, and in the beginning, it was, I believe, it was scripted by Tony Bedard in the very beginning, maybe the first issue, but it's been Neil Adams. At least this issue is all Neil Adams. Pure, unfiltered
Neil Adams. Neil Adams. Unfiltered Neil Adams.
And it's just there's this Neil Adams tone that he does that no one else, and I really can't put my finger on it. It's just bombastic, strange tone, and his art is unlike anybody else's. So this book feels and looks unlike any other book on the stands. But I wanted to highlight it because I could try to describe to you the story, but I don't. It features the New Gods, Orion, and they're fighting Darkseid, who's teamed up with Lex Luthor, who has gained a lot of weight from his normal appearance.
Well, you can't have Neil Adams just accept the way a character looks now.
Right.
He's got to give the Neil Adams touch.
Right. And there's a kid that Superman rescued in the first issue from the Middle East who has been kidnapped to Apocalypse, and Granny Goodness is going to groom him to be her greatest triumph. Which means the milk and cookies she gave him will be the last nice thing he ever has in his life. But there's a point where Superman has been injured. They have to scan him to make sure he's okay. And so he's in this like chamber being scanned, but he's wearing his red briefs with the belt, but nothing else. Oh, and it's like, did he take the whole costume off and then take the red briefs off and then put the red briefs back on?
Does it mean – wait, are you suggesting that the red briefs are almost independent to the blue leggings and
they
that they attach like garters almost?
It's weird like – because so he's in this – you know, all of Neil Adams' men are very manly. There's the hair everywhere.
Hairy chest.
So he's strung up in his little red briefs and gold belt, and then he goes to get his costume and it's like a blue unitard. So apparently – the costume is like a blue unitard, and then he pulls the red briefs on over them.
Oh my god! And I could hear Neil Adams as he's drawing this going, right, this is how it is.
Right,
it's like just, this is a reaction to the Jim Lee lack of red briefs character design, right?
It just seems bizarre that they're separate garments.
I'm really glad that we're focusing on this.
Well, you know, I feel like Superman, and also the guys scanning him. I think they're the other Kryptonians. Just go naked. These are doctors.
Yep.
Hold on, guys. I got to take these off, separate them, make sure to put the belt back on for some reason, and then wear these for an exam, and then take them off, put the pants back on, put the red briefs back on, put the belt on. Meanwhile, everyone's dead because I'm so busy with my clothes. This is one of those books I just read because it's silly, but also Neil Adams can still bring it.
Yeah. He's great. He's
amazing. There's a page where Darkseid's very angry with Lex Luthor, and there's just one of those great dynamic Neil Adams expressions of the hand curling into a fist while he yells at Lex Luthor. It's just wonderful.
Yeah.
Check it out.
Awesome. So Thunderbolts number one came out this week, and Thunderbolts is a group of characters that I have a strong affection for. Right, the original Thunderbolts, the Kurt Busiek, the idea of villains posing as heroes was
Zemo with
a sword. Like, there was just so much goodness with it. So whenever they try to relaunch Thunderbolts, I always kind of take a look at it, and they keep on swinging and missing. You remember the last time the Thunderbolts was that Daniel Way aberration with all characters dressed in red? It was the Red Hulk and Deadpool and Punisher. And,
oh, right.
Yeah, it was really bad.
Well, we had Bendis, we had Warren Ellis do it, right?
I mean, yeah, yeah.
There's been some okay runs on it.
But this time, it's Jim Zub writing it, who's, you know, people might know him from Skull Kickers and Wayward, books over at Image as well. I think he does some licensed stuff for other folks. But with art by John Mallon and color art by Matt Yackey. You might not remember the name John Mallon, but John Mallon is the artist that was doing the finishes on top of Rob Liefeld when he attempted to bring Youngblood back a couple of years ago.
Huh.
Yeah. And listen, we try to keep things positive here. Like, we have a strong rule. Like, you can't just pick up a book and say, oh, this sucks, and not say why. This was an awful comic book. This is, like, to the point where I can't believe Marvel published this.
Really?
It reads and looks like a book either in the late 90s or one of those books by those publishers in the back of previews that are kicking around that are, you know, like honestly, it was like shockingly bad. I mean, John Mallon's art style is very Liefeld-esque, but it's, you know, in terms of that like kind of 90s look and feel. But he's not Marvel. Like, he could be. I think every artist with practice could be good. I mean, you know, we've talked to Darwin Cook, or, you know, about the challenges with art, and his one thing is like, you just got to practice. You put in the time. But I mean, I've come. It's funny because I've come to expect a certain level of quality from Marvel.
Right.
And this just did not connect. Like, it was a complete disconnect as far as what you would expect from Marvel. It
doesn't fit the modern Marvel style or the modern sensibility at Marvel.
Yeah, at all. And then story-wise, I can't tell you what was happening at all. Basically, what I mean, I could tell you briefly, is that it's the original Thunderbolts of Atlas, Moonstone, the tech guy, what's Techno or whatever his name is, and Mach 5. Like, it's those original four and Bucky. And this is coming out of that Pleasant Hill Avengers crossover that we talked about last week that was forgettable, where basically Bucky saved the Thunderbolts. The Thunderbolts were imprisoned in that Pleasant Hill thing. That all went down. Bucky saved them and says, okay, well, I saved you. Now you owe me, and you got to help me with this. But I don't know what this is that they're doing. It's never established as who they're fighting against. Then on top of it, the little girl that was the manifestation of the Cosmic Cube in that Pleasant Hill, that was the center of all that, Bucky has now is taken care of, and she lives with them in their secret base, and it's just weird. It's just weird.
So it's My Five Dads.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, the one of Moonstone's a woman.
That's right.
But I mean, it looks and reads like a Liefeld comic from the late 90s, and not in a good way, unfortunately. So I mean, it was just, and if anything, like, and I really, you know, hate to shit on a book or call it out, but like, I love the Thunderbolts, and I want to see something good with it. And this, I mean, it was just shocking. I just can't believe that they printed it.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So unfortunate. So needless to say, I will not be continuing on.
All right. Well, what would a show be without some Star Wars Corner, Ron?
Well, so Star Wars Corner, we got a little bit of an adventure with Star Wars Corner. And I conferred with Josh on this. So as we mentioned earlier, Josh got laid off this morning. But before he got laid off, or before he boarded his flight, we were talking about Poe Dameron number two. And I recognized that I was very, very hard on the first issue.
Yeah.
Charles Soule writing it, Phil Noto, because there's a high standard here with Star Wars, right?
High standard plus, there's the Oscar Isaac effect. You've got a very high standard for anything having to do with Oscar Isaac.
Exactly. That said, I would like to issue some praise to Charles Soule.
Okay.
And well, of course, Phil Noto gets all the praise because the pages are beautiful and Phil Noto is the best and all that stuff. This issue introduces a villain, so introducing a new character, right? And it's a dude that works for the First Order, and he's got a pencil-thin mustache.
Uh-huh.
Like, he basically looks like a 1940s movie star. Right, and he's kind of, he's suave.
Nice.
His name is Agent Terex, Terex, and he's leading a squadron of stormtroopers to go attack Poe Dameron where he is in the last issue. But we get a little flashback, and it's Captain Phasma briefing him on his ship as to what he needs to do, and he's there. in an emperor-like chair with an open collared shirt, right? And he's got female aliens around him serving him. Like, very good character of Charles Soule. I got to applaud you on this. Like, just like the roguish quality that is that was very entertaining. Now, that said, with praise comes complaint.
Okay.
In that flashback where he's being roguish and he's got his open collar, he's talking to Captain Phasma, and he references the beverage he's drinking.
Uh-oh.
And he goes, can we get on with this, Phasma? I have brandy to drink.
Oh, what?
Right?
Oh, God.
Right?
Why?
This Star Wars does not have brandy in it. You cannot have our things. I mean, and the thing is, it's not like Star Wars is perfect, because I still have a very big problem with In Empire Strikes Back when Han is going to go out to look for Luke on the Tauntaun, and he yells at the deck officer, and he says, "I'll see you in hell."
Right.
Like, there's no hell in Star Wars. Like,
in their belief system, perhaps, you know,
maybe, but
that's not a specific product that we have here. So you could say in every religion, maybe there's some sort of hell.
Yeah. And,
however, maybe. It's like saying, "Hold on, I need a new Budweiser."
Right, exactly. You know, and the thing is, like, if you make it some sort of, you know, like, do what Star Trek did, where there was Romulan ale or some, you know, some right. sort of like add some alien component to it.
Right.
But don't call it brandy.
Mon Calamarian brandy.
Yeah, exactly. Or Malacer brandy or something. You know, I mean, pick your planet. You know.
I get it. You're right. I think it has to have a qualifier, because I'd be okay with like something like spiced wine or something like that.
Right.
As long as there's some sort of exotic modifier to it. Otherwise, it's too close to what here. You don't want that.
He flirts close with it because he says, "This brandy was aged for 50 years, but it wouldn't taste nearly as fine without that Kessel spice."
Right.
So call it Kessel spice brandy, or call it, you know what I mean? Like, give it some sort of qualifier. But it, twice in the scene, refers to it just as brandy. And that's just not – there's no. And,
what did Josh say about this?
I explained the scenario, and he looked at me and goes, "You're absolutely right."
All right. There you go. Josh approved.
Josh approved. So there you go. And then the only other Star Wars corner thing I wanted to mention was that the stupid "May the 4th be with you" May 4th landed on Comic Book Day.
Right.
And so Marvel did a line of their dollar True Believers comics to celebrate Star Wars Day, which I think is a great idea.
Yeah.
One of them happened to be a reprint of Droids number 1, which was the comic book from 1986 to capitalize on the cartoon that was on at the time.
Right.
And so I grabbed it because I looked at it, and it was drawn by John Romita Sr.
We just talked about him.
Exactly. It was John Romita Sr. drawing in that Droids cartoon style, totally cartoony, looks unlike anything John Romita's ever done. And it had that mid-80s Marvel. I mean, it was colored by – I think it was colored by Marie Severin.
Wow.
Like, it was – yeah, awesome. It was just – yeah, exactly. Like, and, oh, the story is awful. Like, it makes no sense. And it's just like C-3PO and R2 are on some ship, and they crash, and something happens. I don't know. It makes no sense. And even the writer, it was written by Dave Manack, who I've never heard of. But, like, he wrote all of R2's beeps and boops wrong. Like, they were – like, Z's and X's in them. And I was like, no. But from an art standpoint, it just cracks me up that it's like legends like John Romita Sr. and Marie Severin working on this book in 1986.
Well, there's a lot of that going on. Kirby was drawing those Super Friends comics with DC.
Yeah. Yeah. So work is work, right?
Getting licensed work, which is great.
Yeah. Work is work. Yeah. But I thought that was funny. So if you got a dollar and you want a nice little time capsule, go check that out.
So those are the books we wanted to talk about this week. GoodEyeFanboy.com. You can find the post for this show. You can talk about those books or other books you read this week in comics.
All right.
Yeah, the comics seem to never stop, Ron. When do they take a break?
They really never stop. They really and I don't. I feel like our general American society does not give the comics industry enough credit for operating on a 52-week basis. Every week these things ship. So let's just take a moment to thank Diamond, our distributor, the retailers that are out there, the publishers themselves. Everyone works very hard to get these comics out, even when they're not very good.
You know, even TV shows get a hiatus. I mean,
geez. Yeah, comics never break. They never take a break.
Let's do some audience questions. The first one is from Colton from what was Fort McMurray, Alberta, Canada.
Oh.
He says, "Hey, this is Colton from what was Fort McMurray, Alberta, Canada. Not sure if you've heard what happened this week up north, especially since it didn't involve maple syrup, hockey, beer, Tim Hortons. Someone apologized to another person, but my city of 100,000 people had to evacuate because the forest fire is starting to overtake it. Before I hustled out of there, I had some time to select what necessary items I would take with me. The only comic book related items I took were my 10 volumes of Chew. which is one of my favorite series, and I thought it would kill a lot of time while I was waiting to hear what would happen. I'm writing this email from the airport on my way to stay with relatives to ask you what comic or unconventional items you would take with you if you were under the same circumstances. Please share the reason why this item is so important to you. Keep entertaining me. Please have a good one. I just feel horrible.
Wow.
For Colton and everyone in Fort McMurray. I mean, that's just a terrible thing that's happening. And it's amazing that Colton was able to get out. And I don't know why you wrote us, but thank you. I mean,
thank you, Colton. Thank you. Yeah, and we hope that you and your family are okay. And, and listen, like, we'll make a lot of jokes about Canada and people apologizing and being polite. But we have friends up in Canada, and we're very aware of what's happening up in Fort McMurray. And just hope that Colton and his family are safe and everybody's okay, and that they can – I don't know what they're gonna do. That's a bad situation up there.
But, and even I saw one of the refugee camps had to be evacuated after the
because
of the fire was moving so fast. So I mean, so that said,
let's talk about comics.
Well, my original answer before I read through the whole email was I will not, if it's a fire, I'm not taking anything. But
well, think about it.
Other than my body, but you know, I get his reasoning. No,
okay.
Why.
So here's the concept is that a fire is coming. You're gonna have to evacuate, but you have time. You have a moment to grab things. So what do you grab?
Well, currently I have a go bag, as every good Californian should have.
I don't have a go bag.
Well,
do I need one of those?
You're gonna be wishing you had my cans of food.
Oh my gosh! Well, you're closer to the fault. Well, no, San Francisco.
No,
actually,
you're in much worse shape than I am.
Yeah, anyway, I'm in much worse shape. Yeah,
you don't need to go back because you'll just be dead. So,
did I ever tell you about when my mother called me once? Like, I'm living in San Francisco for like 3 or 4 years, and my mother calls me randomly and asks me if I have an earthquake preparedness kit.
Right.
And I was like, well, no, I don't. But it'll be all right. Don't worry. And like, they don't happen that often. And she's like, well, you know, when it happens, you know, the electricity and the ATM machines aren't going to work, so you're going to need cash. You should keep some cash stash. And she's coming out with me with these very specific details.
Oh, weird.
And I said, Mom, did you like read a book or something? Like, what is the concern? And she goes, well, I just read a Danielle Steele novel where there was an earthquake in San Francisco, and it outlined what will happen. And I was like, well, I feel like the Danielle Steele novel reality might be different than the actual reality.
Oh boy.
Anyway, right, so
you have your go-bag. I currently have no books in my go bag. And the thing is, it's tougher because if you have watched any of our live shows in the past, you've seen my giant wall of trades. That no longer exists. I took it down, and the vast majority of those are now in storage
at the moment.
So, I mean, I have a handful of books on display. I don't know. I might grab, like, The Dark Knight Returns, sort of a sentimental favorite. I still have the copy that I got when I was 10.
Yep.
I could grab like the hardcover of New Frontier, I guess.
Well, it's funny because in reacting to what Colton grabbed his 10 volumes of Chew, and my first thought is like, that's great. Chew is your favorite comic and you want to read that while you're killing time, while you're waiting to go to a refugee camp or go home or whatever you're going. But like the way I look at it, I was like, yeah, but you can just replace those.
Right.
Like,
exactly.
Like that's actively in print.
Yeah, yeah.
My first approach is I don't actually grab any actual comics. I grab my portfolios of original art. Because those are, and which I don't have any of my pieces of original art framed or on the wall. They're all in portfolios, and you can grab those because those are irreplaceable. Those are just the original art. Once I've got those secure, then I'm looking at my shelves and I'm thinking, okay, what can I not get? You know, first thing that comes to mind is that first printing Rocketeer Artist Edition.
You're strapping a lot of stuff to your back for this.
It's going to be a heavy load out of the
giant
house.
Giant art portfolios, because those pages are not small, and the artist edition also not small.
Yeah.
So you're strapping it on, and then putting the backpack over that.
I'm not done yet.
On the back.
I'm not done yet. Then I think I got to go with my Captain Britain omnibus. Because really, that sucker's out of print. That goes for like $500 on Amazon now. So I mean,
and you could be able to ward off looters or wolves with it when you're living out in the woods.
I'm fairly certain. It's now, keep in mind, it's the Alan Moore run on Captain Britain with Alan Davis. So I'm fairly certain there are magic properties within the omnibus. So I think that there's a spell of protection or something that comes with it. So
that's what you want is a book that can also be used as a weapon.
Yeah, exactly.
So maybe the Amazing Spider-Man omnibus.
Yeah. That's a tough call, though. I mean, like, I think in all seriousness, in those situations, I mean, like I said, I absolutely do go for the art. But then, you know, you just think of what matters to you and what, you know, choose your favorite book. So grab your 10 volumes of Chew. New Frontiers, your favorite, Connor, grab that. You know, like, it you know, I look at it with a little more level of, you know, kind of what can I not replace? This is the kind of thing, by the way, that keeps me up at night. The idea that there's all these things that we have that are so irreplaceable, and like, and the thought of losing them, like, and that they're just things. They're just, yeah, things, they're just things. You know, like, as we're getting older, I'm balancing that between, yes, the, you know, like, what does it matter? These are just things that, you know, it's the whole Fight Club, and, you know, the things are what, you know, drag you down, and how do you, you know, but then at the same time, it's like there's emotional resonance with those things, and losing them, I just,
emotional currency, yeah, and there are, yeah, artifacts that are attached to those emotional currency.
Exactly.
I get it. At the same time, though, if my entire town burned down,
yeah,
I'm not necessarily going to worry about the comics. I've got,
right. Yeah. No, I'm much more worried about the computer.
Right.
So anyway, all right. Well, Colton, we hope you're safe, and everybody you care about is safe, and let us know if we can help in any way.
Yeah.
Yeah, please write in. Let us know that you're doing okay. All right. Next email is from Joe from Pittsburgh, who says, do you ever take the cost of an issue into account when deciding on what should be the pick of the week? I asked this after noticing that Civil War II will be $4.99 for each issue with only a slightly increased page count, rather than only going $4.99 for issue one like Marvel has been doing recently. It makes me think that a great issue of Saga at $2.99 would always be more valuable than an issue of Civil War II, even if that book ends up being fantastic.
No.
Yeah, we don't take price into consideration, although sometimes I like when you pick Batman and it's $5.99 because DC's, you know, wringing as much value as they can out of that, I always cringe a little.
Sometimes,
you know,
it's a talking point in the discussion of the book.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, this issue was double the pages, and so it's a great, you know, you get a lot of story here. But as a story delivery device, not as a factor, you know, when DC put out that 10-cent Batman book way back then, that may have been, yeah, a pick. I don't remember, but it wouldn't have been the reason. It would have just been a talking point.
Right. I mean, and it's tough because I feel like the price of the comics is a completely – the pick of the week conversation is completely – what's not – it's we're talking about the art. We're talking about the story. We're talking about the content.
Yeah.
We're not talking about the economics. The economics of the cost of the issues is a completely different story in and of itself that is completely detached from the work that the writer or the artist put into it. And it's unfortunate because it's a conversation I think that needs to continue to happen in comics, because I think what Marvel and DC are doing with the price gouging is horrifying. But
yeah, we,
you know,
they're in danger of pricing out their customers. Although Jason Wood, the podcaster from 11 O'Clock Comics, used to write a financial column for iFanboy, and he wrote an article once about how, I think, inelastic comic prices are. I believe that's the proper term. That it doesn't matter how much they cost, that the fans will still pay it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the thing. Like, we can't complain about the price of things if we keep buying them. You know, like that's a common thing. I mean, it's like you can bitch and moan about the cost of something, but if you're really that upset about it, then don't pay for it. And
listen, will the show go on if comics cost $10 an issue? Probably not.
Yeah. Yeah.
But for now, it's not a factor in the decision of the pick of the week. It's all about what is enjoyed the most, and that very rarely has to do with the price. I can't imagine it would ever have to do with the price.
Yeah. We made a decision that it's 100% on quality, and you know, we're not taking that into account. So, but it worth asking. So, yeah, thank you, Joe.
Finally, Lucas from Nuhlenbach, Austria, which I'm sure is beautiful, because Austria is all beautiful. He writes and says, in February of 2009, yes, indeed, you are that old.
Well, thanks for reminding me, Lucas.
You did a video show about Marvel Knights and the House of Ideas. During the introduction, you said, quote, first of all, he transcribed this, which is crazy. right around 97, 98, Marvel wasn't putting out the best stuff. There was a little nuggets of greatness, but for the most part, it was not good, consistent quality. I feel like they were trying to keep one foot in the past, one foot going forward. Something had to happen. Something needed to be done. And that's not a direct quote, because there's some ellipses in there. But Lucas says, this got me thinking for about 2 minutes after I thought, meh, I know the three guys who are experts, so why bother with my gray matter when I can just bother them? Is Marvel's situation at the time comparable to DC's situation now? Could they benefit by outsourcing material to another studio? Though I guess they would never consider doing this because it would look like admitting creative bankruptcy. So which real or imaginary studio of creative talents could you imagine be the next Event Comics to DC's Marvel Knights?
I don't think that they're comparable. comparable situations, yeah, because I think Marvel was both on the brink of financial and business collapse as well as creative bankruptcy, whereas as far as I know, DC is a healthy business.
No, DC that, makes a ton of money on their collections.
Yeah,
I mean, even if they were just a collection business, they're making tens of millions of dollars selling trades.
Yeah, and despite speculation or you know whatever you know rumors or anything that we have, as far as I can tell, they have the complete backing of their corporate overlords. You know, like the clearly, you know, Warner Brothers or Time Warner. I don't know what the state of the conglomerate is, but whoever's above them is saying, yeah, keep doing what you're doing because we're doing all this other stuff over here. So it's not like they're on the brink of going away.
Yeah, the only reason Marvel did the drastic things they did is because they were on the brink of going out of business.
Yeah.
Because they were a private company that was bankrupt.
Yeah.
So that's the extreme.
And the thing is that I think that, you know, I think DC, while not on the verge of business collapse, is absolutely, in my opinion,
yes,
as close to creative bankrupt as you get. But I think that they wouldn't take a drastic measure of outsourcing a series of titles to an outside studio because the people who are leading the company are the people responsible for the creative bankruptcy and don't have the pride or the whatever to admit it and make that change.
It takes a special kind of person to be like, I screwed up, I'm out.
Yeah.
You know, most people are going to try to fix it.
Yep.
Or believe that they have the – I mean, you don't get put in a position of leadership unless you think your ideas are the best ones.
Right.
So it takes a certain amount of narcissism anyway to be in charge.
Yep.
It's tough.
Yeah,
but
let's
just play the game. So let's just say, I mean, the joke's always, you know, put Mark Waid in charge of DC.
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't seem to like being in charge of Boom.
Well, I wonder how in charge he was and what he could do. I think.
Although he got a movie deal out of that being in
charge.
True,
he did.
Boom,
yeah, so. Congratulations, by the way, to Mark Waid and Peter Krause.
Yeah.
I mean, we were saying earlier, although in the more negative side, but give it to Mark Miller. Give it to Miller World.
Miller would be interesting.
Yeah, have talk about a studio, Miller World,
ooh,
with Mark Miller, and then look at that lineup of Frank Quitely, I'm blanking, Lenil Yu.
Eminem, you got
Goran Parlov, Eminem.
Now Capullo.
Capullo, Raphael Albuquerque. Look at the artists that he's worked with. Even Duncan Fregredo, who, right, you know, like I think that you give him four or five DC books, and I bet you that would get people talking.
Yeah, that would actually be huge.
Yeah.
That would be the closest I think you could get to having Marvel Knights situation.
Yep.
So there you go. Any questions or comments you want to get in the conversation on the show, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. Don't forget to tell us who you are, where you're from. And just like last week's show, if you want to email us in a little voice clip asking your question, you can do that as well. Now, we're not just talking about weekly comics, Ron.
We got a lot of
special shows over the last month or so. We got some more coming at you. We talked about Daredevil Season 2. You can find that back on the feed. And we got another one coming up this weekend, actually, behind this show.
Yes, actually, yeah. So if you, after listening to the show, go look in your feed, and you can find the brand spanking new review of Captain America Civil War, where I believe me, Connor, as well as Josh, will have discussed what is seeming to be the biggest superhero movie release of the year.
Yes.
And I've seen it multiple times now. You've seen it once. Yes. Josh has seen it once. I actually saw most of it with Josh. We're going to talk all about that in the podcast. But yeah, so definitely. So look right below this episode in your feed, or go to ifanboy.com and you can find the link to download the episode to hear that. Very, very exciting time. And we've also got a new X-Men movie on the horizon. So
X-Men at the end of the month. I don't know if we'll do Preacher. Probably not.
I say we do the pilot.
Okay.
Why not?
I'm down for it. I'm just trying to.
I'm down. Yeah, you and me will do the pilot. Fuck Josh.
But it's the same week as X-Men. I don't know if we're going to do two shows in 1 week. I don't know. We'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out. Yeah, maybe we'll space out. Maybe we'll do Preacher right before the. I don't know.
Watch
we'll
this space.
Yeah, yeah. Stay tuned. Listen, just subscribe to the feed. If you're already subscribed, don't do anything. If you haven't subscribed, go subscribe. It takes a second. Just click the button. Just do it.
Also, we see new people all the time on Twitter telling us they've discovered Goodfellas Minute. It's still out there, goodfellasminute.com. You can find our show. It's evergreen. It's always there. All 145 episodes of us talking about the movie Goodfellas 1 minute at a time. It was me and Ron and Josh, as well as a bunch of special guests throughout the course of the show. It's going to be there, so if you haven't heard it yet, you still can. It's new to you, like we used to say about reruns.
It might be our greatest accomplishment ever, Connor.
We live to tell the tale.
Yep.
So yeah. Goodfellasminute.com is where you can find that.
Yes, excellent. As long as we keep paying for the server. All right. And also,
support ifanboy.com.
Yeah, exactly. What's also evergreen is ifanboy.com. It's been there for the past 10 years, and hopefully we'll be there for the next 10. You can go to ifanboy.com, and you can comment on this show. You can talk about the books that you liked or disagree with us on the things that we talked about. If you like Thunderbolts, please be heard, because I'm really curious. So go to ifanboy.com. At the top of the page is the link to the show, as well as all of our previous shows are all behind that, so you can go back and find all this great content we've been making for the past 10 years. If you're on the social media, make sure you follow us at facebook.com/ifanboy. Or follow us on Twitter at iFanboy. And also you can follow us individually. You can find Connor at CS Kilpatrick, and I'm at RonXO. And if you want to follow Josh, you can follow him at JA Flanagan. Good times on the Twitter.
Did you forget yours?
I did for a moment. I blanked on what my Twitter name was.
Wow.
Which is funny because it's so memorable. So yeah.
And finally, if you like the show, please write us a review in iTunes, or better yet, tell your friends who read comics and or listen to podcasts. Introduce your mom. Like moms, it's Mother's Day weekend. You know, maybe while you're having, if you're listening to this now on Mother's Day weekend, invite your mom to come listen to you with it.
Give the gift of podcasts for Mother's Day.
The gift of iFanboy. Every mom really wants.
Listen, Mom, happy Mother's Day. You should listen to Serial and then iFanboy.
You've heard about podcasts, right? Serial invented them. And there's more of them out there. Some of them are about comic books. And there you go.
All right.
Spread the love. That's it for this week's show. Thank you for listening.
All right. Until next time, these two Jamokes are out. I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
See you next week.